in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Ghana-born Olympian Mame Baini tops Thursday's show. Mame made history at the 2018 Winter Olympics in South Korea, where she was the first African-American woman to compete in speed skating for the United States. While she did not win a medal, Baini said it was a great experience, and she hopes to race again at the 2022 Winter Games in Beijing, China. Dan Friedel asked Mame Baini about her training during the coronavirus pandemic.
I'm only limited to doing off-ice training because the gyms are closed, so I don't have any access to weights. And also the ice rinks are closed because they're a public space. So obviously they would be closed too. It's kind of difficult because we do have training, but it's only in small group, so our coach has to be outside for 4+ hours coaching different groups. It's okay right now because I think my main focus for this season is just to focus more on dry land and off ice training and not really rush too much to be on the ice.
As somebody who participated in the Winter Olympics 2 years ago, and somebody whose goal would be to participate in the Winter Olympics 2 years from now, you're at the midpoint. So,
yeah.
So what are the sorts of things that you're working on at this point of the progression?
Right now, my goal is just to keep progressing my speed and to keep maintaining my strength throughout the whole entire season. So for the summertime, I think a way that I need to be able to strengthen my strength would be to do more off-ice training, so dry land, do more running, more biking and stuff like that, and not focus too much on ice until the season gets closer. And right now at this point, we don't really know when the season will even start. So right now I'm just focused on having more strength and hopefully in the season just becoming faster.
So you mentioned that you had come back to Northern Virginia, which is where you grew up just a week or so ago. Where had you been before? What had you been up to in the previous 3 or 4 months, for example?
So I was in Salt Lake training with the national team, but a couple things happened during the season and it was just best for me to just come home and be with my dad and see my friends to a certain extent, social distancing and all that fun stuff. For right now, I'm just going to be here in the summer, training, at home in Virginia. So I'm really, really happy about that. And just get a nice breath of fresh air. I think that's what it is. So
we're joined on the Sunny Side of Sports by Mame Baini, who's, just recently turned 20 years old. She was a member of the USA Olympic, short track speed skating team 2 years ago. Mame is in Northern Virginia at the moment, about 15 miles or so outside of Washington, D.C., continuing her training. And we just thought that you might give our audience that might not be so familiar with what short track speed skating is all about, a kind of a quick description of what your sport is like and what is it that caught your attention in the first place.
So for me, what I feel like speed skating is roller derby. Oh, actually, it's inline skating on ice. That's basically what it is. Yeah, inline on ice, but obviously we're better and we're faster and a little bit more technical. Yeah, we're just better in general. And it's mainly in the winter. Well, not mainly, but we are a winter sport because we just do it on ice. That's what speed skating consists of. Oh, and there's two types of speed skating. There's long track and there's short track. I'm a short tracker, and the short track is like 111 meters, and I'm not exactly sure how big the long track is, but they just have a bigger straightaway and also a bigger corner. But yeah.
Tell us a little bit about how you got started with skating. What was the formative experience for you? Why was it something that was appealing?
I was born in Ghana in 2000, and I was supposed to come here to the U.S. and visit my dad for, I think, like two weeks, like a couple weeks max. But my five-year-old self was like, I like U.S. and I want to stay here. And my dad was like, okay, yeah, sure, we'll figure it out. So my dad got plans for me to stay here and all that fun stuff. And he wanted me to get involved in, like, some sort of sport so that I can stay busy and not, like, stay off track in a way, if that makes sense. So we were driving around, and we saw a sign that said learn to skate at Skate Quest. And this was, like, 2005 still, so, like, the same year that I came to visit my dad. And so so we saw the sign and went in, and this is for figure skating first. And so I did figure skating for a couple months. And a few months later, my figure skating coach, who's also a speed skating coach, told my dad that I was going too fast for figure skating. I should try speed skating. And my dad, who, like, did not know what it is, was like, okay, yeah, sure, we'll try that. We'll do that. So we went to D.C., every Saturday for a few years. And when I started speed skating, I was 6 years old. So we started speed skating every Saturday at DC at Fort DuPont for, I'm going to say, like 3 or 4 years. And then after that, I started to go to a club in Virginia called Dominion. And then I was with the Dominion for about 6 to 7 years. And then I went to Salt Lake and went for the Olympics and tried out and all that fun stuff. And now I'm on the national team.
And so I saw that you're a record holder in junior speed skating. You're a world champion in junior speed skating, but now you've kind of passed beyond that. And you're on the senior national team. Obviously, you were at the Olympics 2 years ago competing against the best athletes in the world in your sport. Could you have ever imagined that you would have gotten to this point? You just started skating 15 years ago.
I just think, like, it's insane that I've gotten to where I am right now. And I'm at this, like, level of professionalism, I think, right now at the age of 20. So I don't know. I think when I started skating, I just, like, wanted to do it just for fun. Like, I'm doing something cool. But I'm not going to be doing it, like, until I'm 20 years old. Like, no way would this happen. But when I think I was, like, 14 or something, I went to my first junior world, and I broke my ankle, like, during the trial, so I didn't skate as well as I wanted to. But as soon as I went to the international stage, I was like, this is what I want to do. Like, this is so fun. I love traveling. I love seeing other countries, and I also have an opportunity that most people don't have. So, like, why would I not want to take advantage of it? So I started skating and competing more seriously. And then I was like, oh, wow, I'm actually kind of good. Let me keep going to see where this takes me. And my goal will be to go to the 2018 Olympics and hopefully do as well as I possibly can and just go on from there.
Speaking of the Olympics in 2018, what was that experience like for you? What are some of your best memories?
Sorry, I'm just like, I guess, like, stumped, because it's just like there's so many things that happened. It was so much fun. I think during the Olympics, that was the point, like, that was a turning point as to, like, how I should take my skating even more seriously, like, a step more, because the people that I was with, the people that I was skating with, like, obviously I've seen them before, like, for World Cups and stuff like that, but, like, the Olympics is just a whole other stage. It was so amazing. Like, the crowd, the atmosphere was amazing. Like, it was super cool to be at a place where speed skating is literally like football or basketball here. Like, everyone in Korea loves speed skating, so the atmosphere was great. And I just learned so much. My favorite part my favorite part was food. Food is so amazing. It was so good. Like, Korean food, I love Korean food. I love the culture. I love everything about Korea and Asian culture. So I'm very, very excited and happy that the next Olympics is going to be in China. So, I can't wait.
That's Olympic speed skater Mame Biney of the United States. And Mame was talking with Dan Friedel from Northern Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C. And we'll hear the final part of Mame and Dan's conversation during Friday's show. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Now let's go to Kampala, Uganda, where Magume Davis Rakawinge will tell us about a kickboxer who hopes to win international medals for South Sudan.
Most sports events and competitions are on a standstill, while others are uncertain as to when or if they'll resume. But one South Sudanese national living in Uganda, Dutu Achilleo Daniel, is not stopping to do what he thinks will help him shape his future. He visits Katuso Community Gym in Buziga, a Kampala suburb, at least 4 times in a week to perfect his skill.
It's because my opponent cannot rest. That's why I'm not resting. And I do not know what he's doing also. I must do my thing constantly without resting. I must train. Whether they're in the lockdown, that is my advantage. If you're not training, it's my advantage. If you train, fine, we meet in the ring. I have no problem for that.
Now aged 24 years, Dutu started with Taekwondo 10 years ago, before honing his skill at kickboxing.
It is my career. I like it so much. Since I was a child, I feel like to be Mike Tyson, Mayweather, and so many Pacquiao. That's why I want to be. I want to be like those guys too, in the history. In the history of kickboxing and boxing also too. Because this is kickboxing. I can play boxing and I can play kickboxing. If I get someone who is doing boxing and is my opponent, I fight with him. If I got someone who's also doing kickboxing, I fight with him too. I train both.
Hard work pays, they say. Last year, Dutu helped his local club, Police Kickboxing Club, to win the Uganda Regional National Championships. Although South Sudan has had stars like NBA legends, the late Manute Bol and Wal Deng, Dutu says he believes he has what it takes to be the new star and fly high the South Sudanese flag.
So you cannot do something by yourself. You do it for the people, so that the people will be feeling happy back home and my parents also. Because what I'm doing now, some people will not believe it will be good in future. But in my own feeling, they will see it and they will be happy. They will support me in future when I do something better for the country. No one has ever beat me. I always win. So that's why it give me that encourage. In future, I will win more.
His manager, Manyang Jambo, describes him as a very disciplined fighter and agrees that Dutu will make kickboxing a popular sport in South Sudan.
This sport in particular is not that popular in South Sudan. And finding a South Sudanese that has passion in it and that can do it perfectly and represent the country on the international level, this will awaken the country. It will awaken the population of the country and see that there is some positivity in this sport and will encourage the young generation that are wasting their lives doing useless things and can end up participating in this sport and find it their hobby and something that they want to do for life.
Dutu, also known as the Tiger, because of the energy he exhibits in his punches, is yet to be summoned by his country, a thing he says we take with open arms. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala. Uganda.
I'm Dunachiro Daniel, Swan Sudanese kickboxer. Listen to the sunny side of sport on Voice of America.
Thanks, dude. And good luck in your kickboxing career. And thanks also to Magume Davis Rakawinge in Kampala for that feature profile. Nigeria's Ministry of Youth and Sports says the government has plans to grant autonomy to its 38 national sports federations. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye contacted the Director General of the Athletics Federation of Nigeria, Young Pepple.
You will recall that we are the Athletics Federation of Nigeria, AFN, under the leadership of Honorable Ibrahim Shehu Guzo, have been urging government to allow us operate as an autonomous body. That is why I am excited at the prospect of the federal government granting independence to the national sports federations. When the Honorable Minister of Youth and Sports Development, Mr. Sunday Akindare, at a recent radio interview informed Nigerians that his ministry is planning to grant National Sports Federations independence, we received the news with joy. The joy is predicated on the fact that sports associations or federations in most of the leading sporting nations of the world are independent. Granting the federations independence to operate will bring sports administration in Nigeria in line with IOC regulations. This will bring about the needed involvement of corporate entities, which will fast-track the development of our sports. I can assure you that our athletes will be the greatest beneficiaries of this policy when implemented.
Do you think some of the federations can survive without government's financial assistance?
I will say yes and no. Yes, in the sense that Nigeria is a cosmopolitan nation with a population of about 200 million. Therefore, each of the 38 national sports federations can build a fan base that can enable it to sustain itself. It is now left for federations to think outside the box and package their respective sport to attract the much-needed sponsorship. There are lots of business opportunities in sports which can be explored to raise the necessary funds for the administration of the federations. No, because there are some lazy sports administrators who believe so much in handouts from government to be able to survive. Such administrators are the ones spearheading the clamor for the sustenance of continuous running and funding of sports by government in Nigeria. It is worthy of note that just as it is true in life that all fingers are not equal, all the federations cannot also be expected to have the same financial capacity. Financial capacities will be determined by their products, that is their athletes, and administrative acumen.
Do you also think that the private sector will participate actively in sports development if the federations become autonomous?
Yes, I sincerely believe that the private sector will participate actively in sports development in Nigeria. From the fact that we have multinationals in Nigeria that are funding sports in other climes, but they do not do so. The result of my research into the reason for this shows that there is a trust issue arising from the low or lack of transparency by some sports administrators. With people of integrity at the helm of affairs in our sports federations, the scenario will change for the better, and this will lead to more involvement of the corporate world in our sports. Consider the amount of money Nigerians spend to support clubs of their choice, especially in the Premier League, and the amount of money we spend as individuals and corporate bodies to travel around the globe to watch sporting competitions, and you will appreciate the level to which we can encourage the development of sports in our own country. The investments will flow once procedures are put in place to monitor sporting activities in a transparent and accountable manner under independent national sports federations.
That's Young Pepple, the Director General of the Athletics Federation of Nigeria, and he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Benin City, Nigeria. A South African cricket coach says teams will need to change their approach to mental health once the suspended season resumes. My VOA colleague Gwen Uten has more details for us. Hi, Gwen.
Hey there, Sonny. The coronavirus outbreak has forced cancellations and postponements of sporting events around the globe and shed light on the unique mental health challenges the pandemic presents to some of the world's top athletes. South African Patty Upton is a head coach in professional T20 cricket and a mental conditioning coach to professional athletes. In a recent interview with Reuters News, Upton said the suspended season and enforced lockdown have proven to be traumatic for many athletes.
The main thing is every player would have gone through their own and often quite traumatic trauma cycle, is the word I would use, of having had corona all of a sudden pull the carpet out from underneath, at least they temporarily, for their careers going on in this season. It's not dissimilar to an athlete suddenly having an injury when they never expected it and knowing I might be out for 2, 3, 4, 5 months.
Like most sports, cricket games have been ground to a halt due to the pandemic, and marquee tournaments like the Indian Premier League and the Men's T20 World Cup face an uncertain future. Upton admits in the past, his sport has not paid enough attention to managing the mental health of players. And in the midst of the current health crisis, they are in need of more support.
The attention to players' mental health in good times is really not that comprehensive. It's quite light. And we're going through an unprecedented time now where a number of players, for very different reasons than what would normally have, would have gone through various mental and emotional turmoils. Particularly, you know, a lot of them would have gone through financial concerns. You know, they've missed an IPL. And if in good times there's very little support or awareness or platform to be able to manage their mental struggles, I would imagine that at the moment that's being exacerbated, and we just don't really know how well players are coping behind closed doors.
Meanwhile, the International Cricket Council is exploring ways to safely restart the season, but Upton says he does not believe cricket games will resume anytime soon.
It seems like most sports and most governments and most industries are taking a fairly conservative approach to returning to participation. So it's going to be interesting to see just how conservative or aggressive the ICC and the various cricketing nations take this. But I don't see, for all things being equal, I don't see us playing cricket for a fair number of months still. You know, international travel is, in a lot of places, isn't open, and it doesn't look like it's going to be open, at least in the immediate future.
However, Upton says whenever the cricket season reopens, the mental health of players must be prioritized in a post-pandemic world.
I do think that athletes, as I said, I think that some need more mental support than what they've ever needed before, because it pressures on them personally, not performance pressures now. We're not dealing with performance pressures. We're dealing with personal pressures, and those could be significant. And I do think smart teams are going to sit down and go, right, what are the new dynamics that we're going to have to deal with in these post-COVID sporting activities, and how can we prepare these athletes? And all we need to do is we need to prepare our team and our athletes better than any other teams in that same tournament are preparing their athletes. Because there's a lot of unknown, but guaranteed, whenever the first World Cup comes along, you'll have some teams who figured out the psychology of this post-COVID existence. They will be set up to prepare better, and you'll have some teams that have ignored the brand new challenges to individuals around this post-COVID time, and those teams will have individuals who are highly talented but mentally just not coping with whatever this new normal is that we await in sport.
Earlier this week, the ICC recommended a ban on the use of saliva to shine cricket balls during matches. Next month, members of the committee will vote on that and other rule changes in an effort to mitigate the risk of contracting the coronavirus and ensure the safety of match officials and players. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And that wraps up the May 21st edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.